97.1 FM Talk Podcast. The Mark Cox Morning Show.
Listen to both sides.
The bottom line is,
I respect that we don't agree.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Just to find a voice.
Who is this guy? He's saying what we've been saying forever.
I don't know how to put this.
Mark Cox.
I'm kind of a big deal.
Well, it adds excitement, doesn't it, folks?
Welcome into to Debate Tuesday. How about that? Kind of giving you a preview of what's going to happen tonight, what we think's going to happen anyway. Nobody really knows what's going to go down up in Philadelphia, where they're trying to, of course, rewrite the debate strategy, I'm sure, for Kamala Harris. They're probably tweaking it even this morning as they try to prepare for. How do you prepare for Donald Trump? How do you prepare to debate Donald Trump? I think that's a really good question.
Well, apparently it's somebody dressed up as Donald Trump. I'm not quite sure why that would be beneficial, why the person needs to look like Donald Trump, maybe to get in the right mindset.
Because Orange Man bad. It will remind Kamala how much she hates the Orange Man if the person standing next to her is dressed up to look like Donald Trump, and it'll somehow amuse her 20-something-year-old social media influencers.
What color?
They'll think that's cute.
What color pantsuit you think she's chosen for tonight?
I can't imagine. Brown, probably, or black, one of the two.
I feel like, yeah, black or red with the little, you know, everyone has to always have the American flag pin. Like, how dare they step on a
She'll
stage?
She'll have a rainbow flag on her on her somewhere, right?
The LGBTQIA flag.
It's identity politics. It's what the Democrats run on.
Is she also going to have a I Love Palestine? Free Gaza for all. Maybe she'll just have like her. It'll be like a Girl Scout, you know, uniform where they have all the badges. It's going to be like that. Her pantsuit. She's going to have all the things that she stands for.
Yeah, it's. But you know, Limbaugh talked about this. Rush Limbaugh used to talk about this. Is that it's that I'm better than you because I've got this rainbow flag on and you don't. It's like. It's a perception issue in these Democrats' brains. It somehow the identity politics puts them above you. And you know she'll try something like that tonight. And will it be successful? I don't know. I think it's a matter of whether or not we've lowered the expectations for her too much. And then I think we'll know the answer to that question. The media is certainly trying to lower her expectations. They want people to think the word salad Harris will be what you'll see tonight. And then when it's not, because she's practiced for 2 weeks on not to cackle and not to mention being unburdened, then you're going to think, wow, she did okay.
Here's your list of 50 things to not say. Mama K's saying on Facebook that she'll wear suspenders with all her flair, like in the movie Office Space.
Wait. Maybe she's not dim-witted after all. We just don't know. I mean, I do think Trump needs to avoid any reference to her mental capacity.
I think Kamala Harris is probably. I think she actually is intelligent. I don't think she comes off as such, but I actually think she is smart. To get where she's been, she has to be intelligent. I would make that argument. For whatever reason, though, it doesn't translate when she speaks because it's dumbed down. Like,
and
it's
yet,
a bus. A bus yet, has wheels. The wheels go around and around, and they get you from here to there.
Yet, they do. Mentally, she's unburdened by what has been. So,
well, we all want it. That's what I strive for every day, Mark. Don't you?
Yes, we all strive for that. I want my taxes to be unburdened by what they've been. And the only way you can do that is to vote for Trump. We're going to talk to Gerard Felitti coming up here. He is a strategist. He's with the Lawfare Project, and he's a senior counsel with them. And I'm anxious to get his thoughts on what's going to happen up there at the National Constitution Center, the thing that Kamala Harris hates, they're going to debate at the National Constitution Center tonight. So we'll get Gerard's take on the whole thing. Former Senator John Lamping, the bottom of the hour to help us work our way through what's at stake today in the Missouri Supreme Court as they take a look at this Amendment 3 and the wording of it and whether or not it can stay on the ballot. They're trying to hold Jay Ashcroft in contempt for decertifying it. We're going to get to all of that for you at some point this hour. We're also going to give away a couple of tickets to see Trans-Siberian Orchestra. So stay tuned for all of that. But first, let's get to our top stories.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
My mother's family, her father's 8 brothers, parents, sister died because of that rhetoric.
Alejandro Mayorkas, who, of course, I believe has been impeached, tried to claim yesterday that his direct relation died because of Donald Trump's comments, because of comments like Donald Trump's regarding illegal immigration.
Well, Kamala Harris is a politician in the worst sense of the word. Her goal is going to be to deflect away from her disastrous record.
Yeah, I think we should listen more to Tulsi Gabbard because I understand she's been helping Donald Trump a little bit with preparing to debate the woman in the pantsuit.
Well, in a late development today, Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft said he is decertifying that ballot measure after that judge's ruling that that amendment was defective. That may not have much of an impact if tomorrow the Supreme Court rules that the judge's ruling on Friday was invalid and interpreted the law improperly.
Yeah, if a judge rules that something is invalid, it's up to the Secretary of State to then decertify it. But when he did that, guess what? They went to court and tried to hold him in contempt. Today is a big deadline in that case, just so you know.
The other issue is, you know, the Dems are losing men faster than J-Lo.
Oops.
Dang.
And I can't imagine why they would be losing men faster than Jennifer Lopez. How many times has she been married? I mean, I'm not judging or anything.
I think married two or three. I thought married two or three times, engaged once or twice. But I guess I feel like historically the men have been more conservative. It's the women, not that there aren't very liberal men, but that the women are the ones who tend to lean very far left. Which is why the suburban mom, they keep talking about that.
We need to redefine masculinity. There's a toxicity to being a man.
That's true.
And the more we can beat that down and stomp on it into the ground, then you know the better off we'll be as a society.
Do you want to apologize for being a man?
No. Because I can't define
white,
what a
Mark,
man is.
Because that's offensive too, you know?
I struggle because, you know, I have that that privilege that apparently I was born with. And I struggle with that sometimes. So,
yeah, I get that.
It's that guilt that I've never felt in my entire life and never will. In fact, I thought Gutfeld's comments, though, were funny, in spite of the fact that he's a comedian. But he also made the point that the Dems are losing men. But the question is, if common sense matters at all, why aren't they gaining any women? Listen.
The other issue is, you know, the Dems are losing men faster than J-Lo. How does Harris address that in the debate? Is that even possible? Jesse mentioned all of these issues that have to do with safety and security, defunding the police, pro-BLM riots. She praised Jesse Smollett. Remember, compared that to a lynching. She's done nothing about the crime wave. She's released illegals who reoffend. I don't think she's done much in terms of cop killers, in terms of pushing the death penalty. Men care about this stuff. Maybe it's biological, but shouldn't women care as well? How come women don't care? I think they do, but they've been told to care about one thing, and that is abortion. But thankfully, the Supreme Court and Trump have decoupled abortion, right? It's not a national issue anymore. It's off the table. So women don't have to be the single issue voter anymore.
Yeah, I thought he's got a great point. Not that it's not going to be on the ballot, because particularly in Missouri, potentially it'll be on the ballot. The Supreme Court will make that decision later today.
Right, but Kamala Harris wants you to believe that she's going to get that overturned and it's going to, you know what I mean? So I think the women are sticking with her.
And here's the scary part about it. She was at one point in support of stacking the Supreme Court, getting rid of the filibuster in the Senate so that Democrats could use their raw majority to filibuster, to do away with the filibuster so they could stack the Supreme Court. I hope they'll ask her that question tonight. At one point, you were in favor of radicalizing the United States Supreme Court. What's changed? Is it just that you want to be president and you want to lie to people? That's kind of what Bernie Sanders suggested the other day, isn't it? Exactly. All right, let's get to a break. We're going to talk more about what may or may not happen in the debate tonight. We got Gerard Felitti from the Lawfare Project coming up in just a minute, and maybe some TSO tickets. We'll be back. All right. Right now, before we get to our guests, we're going to give away a couple tickets to see TSO December 18th, a single show over here at the Enterprise Center. So you can check it out. And let's see. Let's take yesterday you did caller number 7. Let's take caller number 10 this morning at 314-241-9797. 314-241-9797. Caller 10 will get a pair of tickets to see TSO. And are those tickets on sale already? Or have they gone on sale? Okay, so you can buy them as well, but good luck to you. All right, tonight is debate night. What in the world is going to happen up in Philadelphia when Donald Trump takes the stage for the first time ever with Vice President Kamala Harris? I don't know. Let's see what our guest thinks. Gerard Felitti is with us, political strategist, the Lawfare Project senior counsel. Gerard, welcome in.
Pleasure to be here.
High stakes tonight, huh?
High stakes, and we're not going to see a debate like the last one, that's for sure, but it will certainly be interesting to watch.
Yeah, we know Kamala Harris can speak. The question is, will she speak in circles? I mean, I wonder, when I read the stories about her debate prep, what all they've been telling her to avoid. She's going to have a lot on her plate to keep in order, like not laughing, and maybe trying to avoid the use of the word unburdened.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of words that she needs to avoid, especially ones that she makes up. But the biggest challenge for her is how to respond to Donald Trump by showing disdain or contempt or disagreement with his answers without breaking into cackling or doing something else that will turn off the audience. It's not an easy feat for her, actually. She needs to come across as calm, collected, and with policy ideas that actually make sense, while at the same time avoiding coming off as someone who is losing touch with the American people by speaking in circles.
I feel like she's going to try to bait Donald Trump, though, because I think she's just looking for an opportunity to say something like, how dare you treat me like that as a woman? I can see that happening.
I think that she will absolutely try to bait him, especially when it comes to reproductive freedom. So what most people call abortion, that he will try to bait him in that regard and point out that he has not necessarily been consistent in his policies, and then personalize it, make it about her and other women, and see if he takes the bait.
Yeah, I wonder how much the 2020 election is going to come up in all this. And what would your advice be to Donald Trump on how to handle that? Because I think he's been more forward looking, but occasionally in some of his stump speeches, he goes back to 2020 to try to relitigate that.
Well, that's the issue that Donald Trump has. The biggest challenge is not falling into the trap of relitigating old things, whether it's the 2020 election or even 2016. He needs to remain focused on what his agenda is for the future, especially his economic ideas, and that might very well carry the day. My advice to his team would be to make sure that, to the extent possible, he understands how important it is for him to stay focused, especially in this debate.
You know, here's what I would expect that she's been coached to say, to call him a convicted felon, to refer to the 34 felony counts or whatever it is, his upcoming sentencing. He could be in prison. Why would you vote for somebody like that? All of those things will be designed to sort of get under his skin. I wonder what his best counter argument is to all that.
Honestly, his best counterargument is to completely ignore it and bring it back to the questions that are actually asked of the issues. I think that he will do well if he focuses on being the one who is responsive to the questions and not the one who falls into the trap of these barbs. And that is something that I know his advisors have been telling him, and hopefully that he will follow through and listen on that.
The latest poll that I've seen, New York Times, Siena poll, had them kind of neck and neck. Trump was up a little bit. How crucial do you think that tonight's debate is? Because this very well could be the only debate we see between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris.
Tonight's debate is important for both, but it's not crucial. It's only crucial if one of them makes a very bad mistake or really steps their foot in it. Otherwise, most people have already made up their minds, and the small percentage who haven't, they're going to not necessarily be listening to this debate, but listen to what people are saying after it on social media. They're going to be watching short clips, which is why it's important for Trump to stay on focus and have those good clips if he wants to succeed.
Yeah, I would agree that it much of public opinion will be formed with the spin afterwards, as it always is, and everybody's going to be looking for those one-liners that, sir, you know, you're no John F. Kennedy or you're no JFK. Everybody will be looking for those liners, won't they?
Yeah, they certainly will, but they'll also be looking. I think this election, more than others, people have found out that, you know, the candidates really have not been very specific on how to pay for all of their ideas. And even though Kamala Harris put out her policy agenda finally after how long has it been on her website, still no details. So the people who are undecided and care about that issue, and that's a lot of Americans, especially when it comes to the economy, they will be looking for answers tonight. And if they don't get them, they know that they've done well under Donald Trump. They don't know how they'll fare under Kamala Harris. So she really does have an uphill task tonight, not in terms of performance, but in terms of what she says.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Gerard Felitti, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You bet. The Lawfare Project, senior counsel there and a political strategist as well. And his practice law, he's written a book, a fiction book, I think, called Frozen Tide. And interesting guy for sure. Coming up, John Lamping, former Missouri senator. I want to get into this whole court hearing that's scheduled for 8:30 this morning in the Missouri Supreme Court on Amendment 3. We'll be right back.
Legal fights intensifying tonight to keep an abortion amendment off of your November ballot.
We're at this point because late Friday, a judge decided it should not be on the ballot. And now we're at a point where time is running out. The Missouri ballot has to be finalized by 5 p.m. tomorrow. The state's high court has to make its ruling on the abortion question before then.
Our Russell Kinsall is following both sides of this ballot fight. Russell?
Well, in a late development today, Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft said he is decertifying that ballot measure after that judge's ruling that that amendment was defective. That may not have much of an impact if tomorrow the Supreme Court rules that the judge's ruling on Friday was invalid and interpreted the law.
Yeah, there's some Channel 4 coverage of what's going on with Amendment 3, and we've got former Missouri Senator John Lamping on the line this morning. And John, good morning to you.
Well, good morning to you, Mark and Kim. What an action-packed political day this is. Huh?
Yeah, no kidding. We've got the Missouri Supreme Court is scheduled to hear oral arguments at 8:30 this morning in this case, because today is sort of the deadline to finalize ballots for the election. And as of right now, Amendment 3 has been decertified.
Well, what happened on late Friday afternoon is Judge Chris Limbaugh ruled that the proponents of Amendment 3 to the most extreme abortion legislation possible, which also was purposefully written to be very vague,
yes,
such that it would impact a lot of different places in the statute. Judge Limbaugh ruled that in collecting those ballots, that the collectors didn't provide the signees with a list of the laws that would be impacted by this initiative. And he ruled that as such, then the initiative petition itself was invalid. That's obviously going to be challenged. That's what is being discussed this morning in the Supreme Court at 8:30. It sounds like the pro-abortion side's argument will be that if this were to pass, it wouldn't repeal any laws. It would the way it would procedurally work is that the laws would be nullified once a court challenge is presented on each specific statute. So you can imagine there's a long list of statutes that that the legislature has passed over the years in favor of protecting life. And with the passage of this very extreme amendment, this vaguely poorly written amendment, The potential is for dozens of laws to be nullified or attempted to be nullified through a court process.
So what do you think the odds are that the Supreme Court decides to keep this off the ballot?
I think it's better than 50-50. Wow. The way that we do Supreme Court appointments is not so partisan. We have what's called the Missouri Court Plan. And what that means is that different groups get to nominate different people, and then the governor gets to select from three different people. I don't think that we would have gone down this path on Friday. Chris Limbaugh, let me back up for a second. He worked in Governor Parson's administration prior to be appointed to the Cole County Circuit Court. And I would be surprised if he would have ruled on Friday without the administration thinking there was a very good chance that it would prevail. Now, it's interesting. Last week on your show, and then I've consistently on social media and actually reached out to campaigns, you know, our elected leaders here in Missouri, the two U.S. senators, most of the congressional delegation, none of the statewide candidates have said anything about Amendment 3, which is the most extreme abortion legislation possible. We did hear from Holly this last week, but he focused on the fact that the legislation would allow for children to pursue sex change operations without their parents' consent. That's how poorly written this legislation. But actually, it's not poorly written. It's purposely written to allow a lot of different things. But, you know, all of our leaders have been dead silent on this, which is really disappointing.
I spoke
with Missouri Right to Life people, and they said they don't understand. They've reached out to the different campaigns. So it might just be that this was kind of an inside game, that they were alerted to the fact that this possibility existed. And, you know, we'll be on our knees praying this morning throughout the day that this is taken off the ballot. And I will say this, if this fails and comes off the ballot, I personally would be very much in favor of the General Assembly putting a ballot initiative before the people. They can do that themselves, which says it's illegal in Missouri for a mother to end the life of her child while still in the womb. I'd like to see that language in front of the Missouri people, the voters, and see a real question. Like, this is what abortion is. Should it be legal or not? And I hope that we prevail today. And language like that is what Missouri voters vote on, not this this cornucopia of legislation, which is meant to deceive the voters and to convince them of something that just is not right.
I'll just remind people one more time. We face this very real dilemma, and if it was to get voted in, disastrous addition to our Constitution because of the weak-kneed Senate leadership last year, Caleb Rodden and Cindy O'Loughlin provided in Jeff City. And if it wasn't for that, we would have at least a 50-plus-1 vote requirement in 5 of the 8 congressional districts to make sure that this is truly supported by a majority of Missourians and not just the people in the population centers. And that's why we are where we are today, John. I'm encouraged by your 50-50 estimate here, because I just kind of figure the Missouri Supreme Court has never shown much of a spine when it comes to making hard decisions. If they had, they would have stripped Kim Gardner of her law license.
No, I can understand your thoughts there, but I do think that I think that what happened on Friday, if it were going to be shot down by the Supreme Court, if anything, you think like in a political strategy sense, that would have been viewed as a win for the pro-abortion people. And so in retrospect, you'd be better served by having Chris Limbaugh not rule the way he did, only to have the Supreme Court overturn it. So I'm not suggesting there's coordination between the groups. I just think that his decision to go forward was one, not like just to show that he's trying to do something, but I think it was probably with a sense that the Supreme Court might rule in favor of his ruling, but we'll see. And then again, you know, it's interesting how our quote unquote leaders who are quote unquote fighters are dead silent on this issue. You look to at the federal level, Missouri's. It seems as if, you know, the pro-life part of the Republican Party is being taken for granted or being put down. Actually, you know, the federal platform has no mention of fighting abortion. And like I said before, I really would like to see, if we prevail, the actual question, not women's right to choose or medical health care, all that stuff.
Right.
can a woman end the life of her child while the child is still in the womb? Yes or no? Let's vote on that.
Well, I know the issue at stake here that led to Judge Limbaugh's decision related to what was, or maybe I should say what wasn't on that initiative petition. But I'll never forget being approached by someone who sat there when I went back and forth with him. And he tried to tell me, if you don't sign this, then women who have a miscarriage won't be able to get care. They won't be able to get a DNC. That's the kind of nonsense that people were probably told that scared them into signing it, that led to all those signatures.
Every initiative petition... at the gathering of signature phase, there's no law that says that the gatherers can't lie about whatever you're voting on, you know, and you know, it's a circus. Those the signature gatherers are all, they're kind of like circus clownies or whatever, you know, circus workers. They kind of come in from out of state and they park out at Walmarts or wherever they're going to go. And it's a really bad way to make law, you know, to have a 50, you know, a simple majority pass and change our constitution is a bad thing. You know, there's, I learned recently the state of North Carolina has no initiative petitions. Like, the people can't weigh in any form. And clearly ours at 50 is the most lax that there is in the country. And Mark, I don't think that's ever going to change. There's too much money made on initiative petitions, and there's too many interests, vested interests, to see that it remains the way it is. Most of them fail, but the political consultants get paid whether or not it passes. They get paid more if it passes, but they get paid a lot of money when they fail. And guess what happens when an initiative petition fails? It comes back next time around, and the political consultants get paid all over again.
That's a great point, John. Thank you for that clarity on that as well. Hey, we appreciate your time. Thanks.
Yeah, have fun tonight.
We will. Thank you. John Lamping there, former Missouri state senator. He's talking about watching the debate. We'll be watching it, a bunch of us together, if you signed up early enough before the cutoff for our debate watch party. But, of course, we'll be talking about it tomorrow. We're going to be live down in Eureka in the morning with the show, 5 to 9. Stop and see us, Chicken Ellie's restaurant down there in downtown Eureka. And you can hang out with us. You can get a great breakfast, and you can help us support the Focus Marines Foundation.
It's going to be a good time.
Should be a lot of fun, and we will maybe a little bleary-eyed and running purely on caffeine tomorrow morning after a late night watching the debate, for sure. All right, coming up, we'll get to In Other News this morning with Kim, and next hour, Todd Pyro, Fox and Friends First, will join us, and I'm sure they've been talking maybe just a little bit about what's going on tonight in Philadelphia. We're back in just a minute.
What's happening?
Go, you know the thing.
What the hell is going on?
In Other News.
Some sad news to pass along. Award-winning actor James Earl Jones, of course, the voice of Darth Vader and Mufasa from The Lion King, has died at the age of 93. He passed away at his home in New York. Cause of death has not been revealed. Throughout his career, he received a Golden Globe, 2 Emmys, and 2 Tonys. And then back in, I believe it was 2009, he was given a Screen Actors Guild Life Achievement Award.
Oh, yeah. What a fantastic...
Legal fights intensifying tonight to keep an abortion amendment off of your November ballot.
We're at this point because late Friday, a judge decided it should not be on the ballot. And now we're at a point where time is running out. The Missouri ballot has to be finalized by 5 p.m. tomorrow. The state's high court has to make its ruling on the abortion question before then.
Our Russell Kinsall is following both sides of this ballot fight. Russell?
Well, in a late development today, Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft said he is decertifying that ballot measure after that judge's ruling that that amendment was defective. That may not have much of an impact if tomorrow the Supreme Court rules that the judge's ruling on Friday was invalid and interpreted the law.
Yeah, there's some Channel 4 coverage of what's going on with Amendment 3, and we've got former Missouri Senator John Lamping on the line this morning. And John, good morning to you.
Well, good morning to you, Mark and Kim. What a action-packed political day this is. Huh?
Yeah, no kidding. We've got the Missouri Supreme Court is scheduled to hear oral arguments at 8:30 this morning in this case, because today is sort of the deadline to finalize ballots for the election. And as of right now, Amendment 3 has been decertified.
Well, what happened on late Friday afternoon is Judge Chris Limbaugh ruled that the proponents of Amendment 3 to the most extreme abortion legislation possible, which also was purposefully written to be very vague,
yes,
such that it would impact a lot of different places in the statute, Judge Limbaugh ruled that in collecting those ballots, that the collectors were didn't provide the signees with a list of the laws that would be impacted by this initiative. And he ruled that as such, then the initiative petition itself was invalid. That's obviously going to be challenged. That's what is being discussed this morning in the Supreme Court at 8:30. It sounds like the pro-abortion side's argument will be that if this were to pass, it wouldn't repeal any laws. It would the way it would procedurally work is that the laws would be nullified once a court challenge is presented on each specific statute. So you can imagine there's a long list of statutes that that the legislature has passed over the years in favor of protecting life. And with the passage of this very extreme amendment, this vaguely poorly written amendment, the potential is for dozens of laws to be nullified or attempted to be nullified through a court process.
So what do you think the odds are that the Supreme Court decides to keep this off the ballot?
I think it's better than 50-50. Wow. The way that we do Supreme Court appointments is not so partisan. We have what's called the Missouri Court Plan. And what that means is that different groups get to nominate different people, and then the governor gets to select from three different people. I don't think that we would have gone down this path on Friday. Chris Limbaugh, let me back up for a second. He worked in Governor Parson's administration prior to be appointed to the Cole County Circuit Court. And I would be surprised if he would have ruled on Friday without the administration thinking there was a very good chance that it would prevail. Now, it's interesting. Last week on your show, and then I've consistently on social media and actually reached out to campaigns, you know, our elected leaders here in Missouri, the two U.S. senators, most of the congressional delegation, none of the statewide candidates have said anything about Amendment 3, which is the most extreme abortion legislation possible. We did hear from Holly this last week, but he focused on the fact that the legislation would allow for children to pursue sex change operations without their parents' consent. That's how poorly written this legislation. Well, actually, it's not poorly written. It's purposely written to allow a lot of different things. But, you know, all of our leaders have been dead silent on this, which is really disappointing.
I spoke
with Missouri Right to Life people, and they said they don't understand. They've reached out to the different campaigns. So it might just be that this was kind of an inside game, that they were alerted to the fact that this possibility existed. And, you know, we'll be on our knees praying this morning throughout the day that this is taken off the ballot. And I will say this, if this fails and comes off the ballot, I personally would be very much in favor of the General Assembly putting a ballot initiative before the people. They can do that themselves, which says it's illegal in Missouri for a mother to end the life of her child while still in the womb. I'd like to see that language in front of Missouri people, voters, and see a real question. Like, this is what abortion is. Should it be legal or not? And I hope that we prevail today. And language like that is what Missouri voters vote on, not this this cornucopia of legislation, which is meant to deceive the voters and to convince them of something that just is not right.
I'll just remind people one more time. We face this very real dilemma. And if it was to get voted in, disastrous addition to our Constitution because of the weak-kneed Senate leadership last year, Caleb Rodden and Cindy O'Loughlin provided in Jeff City. And if it wasn't for that, we would have at least a 50-plus-1 vote requirement in 5 of the 8 congressional districts to make sure that this is truly supported by a majority of Missourians and not just the people in the population centers. And that's why we are where we are today, John. I'm encouraged by your 50-50 estimate here, because I just kind of figure the Missouri Supreme Court has never shown much of a spine when it comes to making hard decisions. If they had, they would have stripped Kim Gardner of her law license.
No, I can understand your thoughts there, but I do think that I think that what happened on Friday, if it were going to be shot down by the Supreme Court, if anything, you think like in a political strategy sense, that would have been viewed as a win for the pro-abortion people, And so in retrospect, you'd be better served by having Chris Limbaugh not rule the way he did, only to have the Supreme Court overturn it. So I'm not suggesting there's coordination between the groups. I just think that his decision to go forward was one, not like just to show that he's trying to do something, but I think it was probably with a sense that the Supreme Court might rule in favor of his ruling, but we'll see. And then again, you know, it's interesting how our quote unquote leaders who are quote unquote fighters are dead silent on this issue. You look to at the federal level, Missouri's, it seems as if, you know, the pro-life part of the Republican Party is being taken for granted or being put down. Actually, you know, the federal platform has no mention of fighting abortion. And like I said before, I really would like to see, if we prevail, the actual question, not women's right to choose or medical health care, all that stuff.
Right.
Can a woman end the life of her child while the child is still in the womb? Yes or no? Let's vote on that.
Well, I know the issue at stake here that led to Judge Limbaugh's decision related to what was, or maybe I should say what wasn't, on that initiative petition. But I'll never forget being approached by someone who sat there when I went back and forth with him, and he tried to tell me, if you don't sign this, then women who have a miscarriage won't be able to get care. They won't be able to get a DNC. That's the kind of nonsense that people were probably told that scared them into signing it, that led to all those signatures.
Every initiative petition, at the gathering of signature phase, there's no law that says that the gatherers can't lie about whatever you're voting on, you know, and you know, it's a circus. Those the signature gatherers are all, they're kind of like circus clownies or whatever, you know, circus workers. They kind of come in from out of state and they park out at Walmart's or wherever they're going to go. And it's a really bad way to make law, you know, to have a 50, you know, a simple majority pass and change our constitution is a bad thing. You know, I learned recently the state of North Carolina has no initiative petitions. Like, the people can't weigh in any form. And clearly ours at 50 is the most lax that there is in the country. And Mark, I don't think that's ever going to change. There's too much money made on initiative petitions, and there's too many vested interests to see that it remains the way it is. Most of them fail, but the political consultants get paid whether or not it passes. They get paid more if it passes, but they get paid a lot of money when they fail. And guess what happens when an initiative petition fails? It comes back next time around, and the political consultants get paid all over again.
That's a great point, John. Thank you for that clarity on that as well. Hey, we appreciate your time. Thanks.
Yeah, have fun tonight.
We will. Thank you. John Lamping there, former Missouri state senator. He's talking about watching the debate. We'll be watching it, a bunch of us together, if you signed up early enough before the cutoff for our debate watch party. But, of course, we'll be talking about it tomorrow. We're going to be live down in Eureka in the morning with the show, 5 to 9. Stop and see us, Chicken Ellie's restaurant down there in downtown Eureka. And you can hang out with us. You can get a great breakfast, and you can help us support the Focus Marines Foundation.
It's going to be a good time.
Should be a lot of fun, and we will maybe a little bleary-eyed and running purely on caffeine tomorrow morning after a late night watching the debate, for sure. All right, coming up, we'll get to In Other News this morning with Kim, and next hour, Todd Pyro, Fox and Friends First, will join us, and I'm sure they've been talking maybe just a little bit about what's going on tonight in Philadelphia. We're back in just a minute.
What's happening?
Go, you know the thing.
What the hell is going on?
In Other News.
Some sad news to pass along. Award-winning actor James Earl Jones, of course the voice of Darth Vader and Mufasa from The Lion King, has died at the age of 93. He passed away at his home in New York. Cause of death has not been revealed. Throughout his career, he received a Golden Globe, 2 Emmys, and 2 Tonys. And then back in, I believe it was 2009, he was given a Screen Actors Guild Life Achievement Award.
Oh, yeah. What a fantastic and memorable voice. I mean, what a day for Carl Middleton to be off the air.
That was my very first thought.
He's probably on his trip to Vegas. He's probably wearing a Darth Vader mask on the plane just in honor of him.
I wondered if maybe he'd have to cancel that to mourn.
Luke, I'm your father.
I am your father. Simba, everything that this touches is ours. I mean,
just what a memorable voice. So many different things he's done over the years. And I was thinking about that earlier as I listened to the sound clip of him. It Maybe Bo Matthews could imitate that, because you got to have a really deep voice to do James Earl Jones. It's just what a memorable voice he had.
Yeah, very, very iconic, that few people will be able to really ever match. So
yeah, wasn't he in the Hunt for Red October? Didn't he play James like the boss?
Maybe.
Seems like he did. He was in so many great movies over the years.
The one I remember is like Conan. Yeah, Conan, and no one remembers it.
I know. 93 years old. Good life.
Yep, yeah, absolutely. Well, just a couple of hours ago, Elon Musk's SpaceX launched Polaris Dawn to attempt the world's first ever private spacewalk. It's a 4-man crew. Two of the 4 members on that flight are expected to leave the capsule and conduct a spacewalk, which would be the first time that private citizens are doing this. They're going to be conducting research, apparently, to try to advance human health on Earth. And I guess they had several weather delays. They were supposed to launch back in August, rather, and then had to keep pushing it back. But they did launch around 4:30 our time this morning.
I'm going to ask a really dumb question here. So my scientific friends out there, go ahead and laugh at me if you will. But if all they're doing is tethering themselves to the spacecraft and floating around outside, exactly what are they going to accomplish that all of the other astronauts who've done that before didn't? Like, they're not going to the moon. They're just going to go hang out outside of the spacecraft in outer space?
It was something about, like, they're trying to go it'd be the farthest that, like, private citizens have gone. I don't even know. It's like they just want to go far enough to set a record.
Let me go see if I can post an update to Twitter while I'm in outer space.
The first time they've ever posted to Twitter.
Come on, give me a
break. Let me stick my finger outside it. The farthest they've ever gone by 1 centimeter, a brand new record.
How much do they have to pay to do that?
I should look that up.
But let's be honest, Mark, if you go to space, I better be going outside.
Well, I guess.
You know what I mean?
I guess.
Yeah, why is it only 2 of the 4 going in? I would want to go outside. All right, Apple unveiled the iPhone 16, which is including Apple Intelligence. It's available for pre-order on Friday in store September 20th. Listen to this. One of the new features relates to the camera. You'll be able to point the camera at like a restaurant, for example, and it will pull up information like reviews in the menu, how to make a reservation, all kinds of things. It's going to be able to identify dog breeds, landmarks. So if you pointed it at a landmark, it sounds like it will be able to pull up instantly information about that building.
So AI is no longer 2 words.
Artificial intelligence.
It means Apple intelligence. Is that what you just said they've named it?
Apple intelligence.
AI is Apple intelligence now, not artificial intelligence.
You think Kamala will explain that, the differentiation, tonight's debate?
They should tell her before tonight.
Not going to lie, I need this, though. The point stuff and tell me what it is, I kind of need that. Just saying.
Isn't that a little too invasive?
People are going to be lining up. I mean, they do for every new iPhone, but especially for this one.
Will it do it automatically?
If you hold
up
the camera, sounds like it's automatic.
No, thank you. Coming up, we'll get to a Todd Pyro, I promise. About 6.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Happening. You know the thing.
What the hell is going on?
In other news.
Some sad news to pass along. Award-winning actor James Earl Jones, of course, the voice of Darth Vader and Mufasa from The Lion King, has died at the age of 93. He passed away at his home in New York. Cause of death has not been revealed. Throughout his career, he received a Golden Globe, 2 Emmys, and 2 Tonys. And then back in, I believe it was 2009, he was given a Screen Actors Guild Life Achievement Award.
Oh, yeah. What a fantastic and memorable voice. I mean, what a day for Carl Middleton to be off the air.
I was just about to say the same thing.
That was my very first thought.
He's probably on his trip to Vegas. He's probably wearing a Darth Vader mask on the plane just in honor of it.
I wondered if maybe he'd have to cancel that to mourn.
Luke, I'm your father.
I am your father. Simba, everything that this touches is ours.
What a memorable voice. So many different things he's done over the years. And I was thinking about that earlier as I listened to the sound clip of him. Maybe Bo Matthews could imitate that, because you got to have a really deep voice to do James Earl Jones. It's just what a memorable voice he had.
Yeah, very, very iconic, that few people will be able to really ever match. So
yeah, wasn't he in the Hunt for Red October? Didn't he play James Like the boss?
Maybe.
Seems like he did. He was in so many great movies over the years.
The one I remember is like Conan. He was in Conan, and no one remembers it.
I know. 93 years old. Good life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just a couple of hours ago, Elon Musk's SpaceX launched Polaris Dawn to attempt the world's first ever private spacewalk. It's a four-man crew. Two of the four members on that flight are expected to leave the capsule and conduct a spacewalk, which would be the first time that private citizens are doing this. They're going to be conducting research, apparently, to try to advance human health on Earth. And I guess they had several weather delays. They were supposed to launch back in August, rather, and then had to keep pushing it back. But they did launch around 4:30 our time this morning.
I'm going to ask a really dumb question here. So my scientific friends out there, go ahead and laugh at me if you will. But if all they're doing is tethering themselves to the spacecraft and floating around outside, exactly what are they going to accomplish that all of the other astronauts who've done that before didn't? Like, they're not going to the moon. They're just going to go hang out outside of the spacecraft in outer space?
It was something about, like, they're trying to go it'd be the farthest that, like, private citizens have gone. I don't even know. It's like they just want to go far enough to set a record.
Let me go see if I can post an update to Twitter while I'm in outer space.
The first time they've ever posted to Twitter.
Happened. Come on, give me a
break.
Let
me stick my finger outside it. The farthest they've ever gone by 1 centimeter, a brand new record.
How much do they have to pay to do that?
I should look that up.
But let's be honest, Mark, if you go to space, I better be going outside.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I guess.
Yeah,
so.
Why is it only two of the four going in? Why, I would want to go outside. All right, Apple unveiled the iPhone 16, which is including Apple Intelligence. It's available for pre-order on Friday in-store September 20th. Listen to this. One of the new features relates to the camera. You'll be able to point the camera at like a restaurant, for example, and it will pull up information like reviews in the menu, how to make a reservation, all kinds of things. It's going to be able to identify dog breeds, landmarks. So if you pointed it at a landmark, it sounds like it will be able to pull up instantly information about that building.
So AI is no longer two words.
Artificial intelligence.
It means Apple intelligence. Is that what you just said they've named it?
Apple intelligence.
AI is Apple intelligence now, not artificial intelligence.
You think Kamala will explain that, the differentiation, tonight's debate?
They should tell her before tonight.
Not going to lie, I need this, though. The point stuff and tell me what it is, I kind of need that. Just saying.
Isn't that a little too invasive?
People are going to be lining up. I mean, they do for every new iPhone, but especially for this one.
Will it do it automatically?
If you hold
up
the camera, sounds like it's automatic.
No, thank you. Coming up, we'll get to a Todd Pyro, I promise. About 6.
Get more at 971talk.com.